Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio number 435. This is Kevin DeFrango. On one end is Jeremy Mays. What's going on, sir?
Wow, that's a rough start. Not much. What's going on? How are you doing?
Yeah, I tried to make those a little more dramatic, and they failed miserably.
We're not dramatic at all.
Oh, so... All right, so, drama.
Yep, there's lots of drama as to who's on the other side of the line here, too. Chris, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing all right, fellas.
with that, anticipation, it would have been great if it was someone totally, like, unexpected. And on the other end is Kurt Angle. And say, just like that, not even excited, like, we actually have a real wrestler on, and you're just like, yeah, that's just Kurt Angle. So,
wow.
They do any podcast these days, right? So we could get him, right?
Probably.
Would that be my get?
Yeah. After all the old shit talk that used to go on about him, no, there ain't no chance that would ever happen.
You don't think Matt Hardy has forgiven us yet?
Well,
we have effusively praised him for a good solid 2+ years now. So I think maybe the past can be the past. Plus, it does help that he is not having let's just say problems of the alcohol or drug variety at the current moment.
Or grapes.
Or what?
Or grapes.
Ah. Man, what is wrong with my thing? Anyways.
Yeah.
It's me. It's mine, not you guys.
Okie dokie. Well... do we start at Matt Hardy now that he gets brought up obliquely or fuck it, let's
well, I was
start
gonna say, Matt Hardy started
kind of tie into the other topic too.
Yeah, because I was gonna say the whole Matt Hardy stuff started in TNA, so we might as well just start there. Like one of the last good things that anyone remembers from them.
Let's not even words about it. It's the last good thing that company ever came out of that company. They have been a mess. Well, they were a mess before, so, during, and after, but it was a bright spot. Since then, there have been no bright spots.
I couldn't believe, because I remember seeing it, they've had a lot of people leave recently, although, in some ways that could be okay for them. get the stench off of the whole product and start fresh. But I'm not sure that you, because I'm trying to think. I know that Madison Rayne was one of the people that left. James Storm left recently. Laurel Van Ness left, which honestly, that was a character that I thought was kind of funny, or at least the concept is good, where wedding goes awry and bride goes bonkers and continues to stay bonkers.
Okay, so maybe that was a problem. Fuck. I honestly don't know why I'm on this right now, but that's not your guys' fault. So.
Yeah, all right.
The Laurel Van Ness thing, I actually thought that was kind of funny. And
great.
They just dragged it into the ground, which is fine, too.
Yeah, she just never took off her wedding dress. She just... she was drunk on TV every week. It may have been the only entertaining thing that they were doing.
Now, I didn't have Pop TV for the longest time, and now that I do have it again, well, I don't care to watch TNA right now, but Didn't she win their Knockouts title?
Okay, now that's beyond my okay. interest or of
it. Right. I was honestly wondering that because I know that when she asked for her release that she was in, I guess they're having a Knockouts tournament, and she was part of the tournament. So during the tapings of this tournament, she asked for a release. Now, was she granted her release?
Well, that's right. You know what?
Yeah.
Right, so she is gone.
No, wait. As of the end of the tapings, I believe the marathon taping schedule is going on for months and months. I believe that she is the women's champion right now. She's the Knockouts champion.
All right, that's what I was wondering. I mean, it's kind of a big deal to have the girl that, you know, is or potentially you set her up to be champion is no longer going to be with your company. I mean,
and apparently she asked for her release earlier, but they didn't give it to her right away, and they decided, you know what, we're going to give you our title anyway. So it's still a mess.
Haven't they kind of done that in the past? Like, because AJ Styles wasn't under contract, and he got the title, right? Or did his contract run out while he was champion? Remember that whole debacle? And then they came up, and then he came back and lost, and it was then basically went to New Japan right after that.
Yeah, I think he was always going to leave. It's God, that is such a blur. Oh, he beat Bully Ray for the title.
Mm-hmm.
Just the Aces and Ace angle had been going on for about nearly 2 years at that point. And then he lost to, it wasn't EC3 at that time, who was Magnus. Magnus, where they were from Crush.
He lost to Magnus? Yes.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, Laurel Van Ness is gone.
Laurel Van Ness is gone, and then a number of major talent contracts go up next year, including, I've heard it says, EC3, Bobby Lashley, and Eddie Edwards. So who knows what this roster is even going to look like. But we do have, once again, yet another management reshuffling.
So John Gaborik, all right, I just saw this. So John Gaborik's the guy that left. After
I think he's still there, but he's probably on his way out. They're moving the entire operation to Canada.
Well, I was just reading. No, he is gone.
Oh, he might be by now, yeah. But no, they're moving the entire operation to Canada, basically.
And it's like I said before the show, it could be worse with Damore and Don Callis. I mean, can it possibly be any worse than Dixie Carter?
No, at this point, if we're going to keep this thing running, I guess. I mean, who else is going to? I mean, Damore has had flurries of, I don't want to say greatness, but potential in booking role in Impact TNA in the past. Don Callis is a ridiculously curious case of someone who was out of the business for like 15 years. Kind of stumbles in, you know, by virtue of his friendship with Chris Jericho back into podcasting, and then uses his friendship with Kenny Omega to get himself the New Japan gig after Steve Corino left.
I didn't realize it was
now he's still running
years.
A company.
Wow.
He mentioned that it had been quite some time on one of those Jericho podcasts. The time period. So, because I'm trying to think of what he was doing, because he even mentioned what he had been doing in the meantime, and it's slipping my memory because I don't really care.
Well, it's funny because I mean that's like that classic. It's not what you know; it's who you know. If that's the case, I never really followed. I just know he suddenly appeared on Jericho's sub-network on Podcast One, and then he's doing New Japan commentary, right? Him and Kevin Kelly?
Yeah, him and Kevin Kelly do the New Japan World and English commentary for the big shows.
And now he's going to run TNA. I mean, I I'm going to guess because he lives in Canada, it makes it easier.
Yeah, makes it easier. Probably makes it easier. Yeah, lives in Canada. He, you know, he's always been a guy who, I'm sure he presented, who seemed like he presented himself well. I mean, that was his entire character, is that he was this intellectual who's, you know, smarter than everyone else. So he presents himself as being a really smart guy. He may very well be.
He doesn't seem that dumb.
Yeah, I was going to say, I felt like Steve Austin kind of had something of a friendship with him, too, and thought fairly highly of his mind for, you know, wrestling.
I mean, the one thing that does concern me is, now, I do not regularly listen to Don Callis's, you know, the, you know, podcast with Lance Storm, but apparently... And he and Lance Storm were reviewing the last TakeOver War Game show. Callis hated the show for some reason. Now, I don't know why. I didn't hear it. But I'm like, if something's going to make you question someone's judgment about modern wrestling, I think that's it.
Yeah, I've never listened to the podcast, but what would he have to complain about? You know,
that, like... I don't know. That's... I'm talking about something that I read third hand that he you know, badmouthed that show. I don't understand why anyone would. I think you could show that show to Jim Cornette and he would actually like it. So I don't understand. So, but he does also do commentary for New Japan, which is the most, you know, progressive style in the world, and I assume he enjoys what he does there. So I guess we just don't know what his feelings on wrestling in 2017 really are.
That's got to be kind of concerning then.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, if I thought War Games was pretty goddamn good, so
a great show.
Have somebody criticize that, I mean, I haven't been on one of these shows in a while, but I'm not going to go back to rehash stuff, but that Aleister Black Velveteen Dream match was fucking fantastic, and War Games itself was great, even with the rule change. And then, you know, Andretti and Galloway was good too. So, yeah, I kind of concerned about what he would, why he wouldn't agree, or why he wouldn't like that. Because, yeesh. Because I've seen like results of TNA shows, and it's the same garbage. X Division's got six guys in a match, and they're all fighting for a, you know, some dumb thing, and then they get a title shot that's another six person tag team match. Like, what are we doing? So, and maybe that stuff will stop. But
I know. Maybe a more old school presentation is what's needed for Impact. But then, what's the roster going to look like? From what I've seen, they're already doing things where they're, like, sending their cameras to indie shows and watching their guy and filming their guys have matches on indie shows and putting that on Impact. Is that what they want Impact to be?
Isn't that, like, a 1980s, like, early 90s thing to do?
That's what I'm saying. Is their goal to have, you know, maybe use Don Callis' connections in Japan and you know, and build a new relationship with New Japan and other promotions, and like do like a control center type of, or studio type of show where you're just sending the matches from tape from all over the world?
Yeah. I'm not going to say I'm against that, but not for like your flagship. If you have a secondary show, you can do that tape. Like if they return to house shows, which they're trying to. That's how you can do that stuff and just put it off as your product, but as your flagship title, absolutely not. You can't do that.
Yeah, no, the business has changed, but right now they're just running off of Pop TV and with no indication that anyone else is showing any interest in them or having a number two wrestling company, or at least any major network. Maybe the best. You know, so much to wonder if New Japan's on board with this. Is like, do they really understand the American, the U.S. market? If they think that or the North American market, if they think that partnering with Impact's a good idea. Well, I mean, they've already got one junior partner in Ring of Honor, so why do you need Impact then?
Wasn't Sinclair Media supposedly either being bought or buying somebody else? Like, the parent company was about to buy another media corporation?
Bought is buying Tribune.
That's it. That's not a small company.
Control of a redundancy. No, they're gonna own stations, and at least one, if not maybe two stations in like every market, like every major market, maybe in mid-sized, small markets. You know, there's a whole thing about Claire and, you know, what they're trying to do to the TV news bit, the local TV news business. Yeah, you know, not the most. I mean, that's not nothing to do with the wrestling part of the company, but.
Well, I mean, it kind of does, depending on what their focus is. Because if you buy Tribune, don't they own WGN?
I don't remember.
I wasn't expecting you on this topic. I would have known, but that's immediately a major network. Not as big as it used to be, like when we were kids, but that's a major network that's in every single household with cable. Automatically, you're in every household in America.
Yeah.
So
I haven't heard that Pop TV were not to have that kind of reach, but it's possible. It's definitely possible. So I mean, is it possible that there's going to be a strong partnership between Impact and Ring of Honor and New Japan and whatever? It's probably CMLL in Mexico, because everything else in Mexico has apparently gone crazy over the past few months. But, you know, are all these promotions going to kind of, could they all partner together for a major venture? With certainly New Japan is the flagship, that it wouldn't even be, you know, a doubt about that.
I don't even know why you do that if you're New Japan.
Right.
Like, because ROH gets you into enough markets, and they have their own website, somewhat similar to the WWE network, so you don't really need a whole lot.
Right, and, that's true. That's the, yeah, said. Instead, you're just partnering with more idiots, basically, when you're doing fine on your own. I mean, what New Japan would basically needs is to get on a better network in the U.S. with English commentary.
Oh,
I don't know. That's the now the whole Jim Ross situation. What he is allowed and not allowed to do, that he's got a contract with WWE. You know, at that point, you probably do. Go with Kelly and Callis as your announce team. And then Callis has this gig as an executive with Impact. At least you have a loose affiliations.
You know what? That's a good point, actually. With him taking like an executive position in another company, I wonder how that is going to run for him doing commentary. Are they going to allow him to do that, knowing he's part of another company? I mean, it's not, you know, it's not like you're making like executive decisions, obviously. You're doing color commentary. But still, I mean, I'm trying to think of an example, because WWE would never let it happen, but just trying to think of one network doing something, like, I don't know. Like, ESPN would never let Dick Vitale go and call a NCAA championship game. I guess the best example I can come to right now.
Yeah.
Well, right now, Jim Ross is still allowed to do, you know, he did WrestleMania, and then he did the New Japan shows, and they let Jim Ross call the main event of WrestleMania, and knew he was going to be back on New Japan and Access like a week later.
Well, he only called the one match, right, for NXT. Was that WrestleMania? Then,
yeah, he did Roman Reigns and Undertaker. Which might have been more along the lines of Undertaker asking for him to do that match, but you know, he's still one of the last voices you heard during the main event of WrestleMania. Since then, he's done he did one UK show, but that project's pretty much gone by the wayside as its own thing.
Yeah.
And then did one match on a or did he's done a couple things with NXT.
Yeah,
definitely not this last takeover.
Yeah, because he called Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne at, was it SummerSlam? So it would have been Brooklyn Takeover.
That was the Chicago one.
Oh, Chicago?
I think. Yeah, they did the Chicago one. Then I think they brought him out to do a match. I don't even remember what match it was at the Brooklyn one.
Yeah, that I thought that was the Tyler Bate Pete Dunne one. That's when Pete Dunne won the UK title. Because that was right after his wife, his poor wife dying.
Oh,
eh. Boy. it's getting dark now, but...
Okay,
we're... Yeah, sorry. So basically, the thing is, would Don Callis still be allowed to do that? Or maybe maybe New Japan's like TM what? Impact Wrestling? What? Whatever.
Oh, I think they remember TNA. Remember they sent Okada and Tanahashi over there when they were younger, when Vince Russo booked them as, you know, your stereotypical, you know, stupid Japanese.
The best part of that sentence, and it was no fault of your own.
Yeah.
Was he books them like the typical Jap. And then your audio cut up for a second.
Oh,
old veteran coming back from the war. He booked him like a slant. Like, wait. No. I love little moments like that.
Stereotypical.
All right. Anyways.
The people in charge of family, they're probably, I guess they understand that there's new ownership and new management, so maybe they'd be more open to doing work with them, especially with Don Callis as the middleman. But I mean, we'll see. This is all speculation at this point.
Yeah, because I mean, their capacities, honestly, even within Impact Wrestling, are quite vague.
It seems like Callis and Damore are gonna be running the show together. You know, a number of people are already out. Dutch Mantel was considered a Jeff Jarrett guy, so, you know, his days were numbered. Bruce Pritchard's already gone. I don't know if he ever actually had any legitimate, you know, responsibilities. John Gaburek's gone. It's just another TNA reshuffling of the executive team. Going to be another relaunch. More talent leaving. What are they going to replace them with? It's just this it's really amazing the amount of trouble that's gone into keeping this thing alive.
And then to have oh my goodness, Anthem Byam. Who was the owner of Flow Sports? Because that's gone.
Flow Sports is a streamer of amateur, bringing less popular amateur sports to the masses. It was the original, you know, mission statement of Flow Sports, but someone got the idea to enter the wrestling business, and they never made the right deals, and apparently, except paying Gabe Sapolsky like $3 million over the course of 5 years.
Ooh, good for him.
Yeah.
Make that money, son. So,
but that's all in court right now, and the Flow Slam has, you know, Flow Slam has closed up.
Yeah, unceremoniously.
I do not know the name of the owner of Flow Sports or who that is. If it's anyone who, well, they got a lot of funding. They were throwing around a lot of money, probably for not a lot of return.
For a lot of return for our business.
Yeah.
I'd say that's a fair assessment. All right. Well, I'm out of things to talk about with TNA, by the way. So.
Oh, yeah. I think we all are.
Who's the champion? Who's the TNA champion, by the way? Like, right now.
Oh. Eli Drake.
Yeah, dummy.
Cool, so...
He's been the champ for, what... Because I happened to see that when I went on Stunt Granny's Twitter today. And it's like 183 days or something like that is Impact Champion. I was like, oh my god.
Wait, that's 6 months. Wait, did I do my quick math right?
It's in the neighborhood, like, you know, five probably.
Wow. That is, that's something. I didn't expect that, nor did I know Eli Drake was champion.
I guess that would be. I'm sorry. Yeah, that would be half a year.
So this man has been champion for half a year, and okay, that's on me. Never mind, that's on me. But
yeah, that's the only reason. I guess I had remembered that he'd won the championship at some point, but I have not watched all that frequently. Oh, that's right. I watched that one week when our DVR took a dump, and I realized I did not need to. I was fine living without it in my life.
Was that when I? Never mind. That's not fit for air. So, anyways, yeah. Cool. Let's just switch to something else. I don't care. We're talking politics. Anything other than TNA is fine with me. Because
it's not a show anyone watches. Well, what's the burning topic of the WWE? Is it the continued brilliance of the Sammy and Kevin show on the Smack of Downs?
or the newly woken Matt Hardy?
Or the newly woken Matt Hardy?
I mean, since SmackDown's fresh, I don't mind talking about either one. I can't tell if you're being sarcastic or not, but Owens and Zayn are awesome on SmackDown.
No, not being sarcastic at all. Like, it's actually what they're doing right now is something that, to me, that's the kind of cheating that got Eddie Guerrero over.
Yeah, except they're not doing it with like a wink and a nod like Eddie did. They're just being dicks.
Well, that's true. It is different. But, you know, and you told me right before the air, because I did not know why Daniel Bryan had dad face on again. And it was because Shane McMahon is just trying to screw over Zayn and Owens, and he is none too happy about that.
Okay, so at the beginning of the show, every single thing Owens and Zayn were talking about was exactly true. Like, you start thinking about it, and you just go, wait a minute, everything they named Vince and Steve Austin, the Authority, so Stephanie and Triple H were using Randy Orton. I mean, yeah. I mean, they kind of buried Randy Orton there because it was the truth. Because I think Shahid and I even talked about how Randy Orton's known for just always joining a group.
Oh. Yeah, he's been a lone wolf for a while at this point. But you're right. Like, the early part of his career, because, I mean, his evolution, and then he jumped into the Authority pretty soon thereafter. And did he have another group?
Rated RKO.
RKO Legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Randy also always seems to fall into groupthink mentality. That's a fair assessment. They're definitely at risk of, you know, putting Sami Zayn and, well, Kevin Owens for the first time, and Sami Zayn back to being baby faces. It really is. They're telling the truth. I mean, Shane is definitely, you know, drunk with power. You know, ever since Survivor Series, he's been totally out to get them. Since when has the target of the McMahon's ire in that regard ever been, you know, a heel, essentially? There were times when the McMahon's were baby faces or figures, of course, but the way Shane's going about this, it's pretty underhanded. It's obviously been played as too much.
My thing was when they start doing this, like, is Shane too bulletproof though? Like, is the crowd ever, like, is the idea of this to get the crowd against him? Because no one wants to boo Daniel Bryan. But then no one wants to boo Shane McMahon either, so it's really weird.
It is really weird, and everything seems to be building to, because, well, now with the stipulation, Shane is the referee, Owens and Zayn are fired, gone completely from WWE if they lose, and Daniel Bryan is blatantly showing that, you know, he doesn't like this at all, but Owens and Zayn are still the heels. It's signs are pointing to Daniel Bryan going heel after Clash of Champions at Clash of Champions.
Yeah, they've been hinting at Daniel Bryan doing something for the last few weeks, but today was the most blatant. But then also, I mean, even Kevin Owens and Zayn, they consistently go to Daniel Bryan about stuff. They're always talking about, I'm going to go talk to Daniel Bryan. Now, imagine it doesn't always work, but they're still doing it.
Well, and they even had that extra scene tonight where Kevin Owens thanked him for, you know, at least listening to him. Like you said, like, yes, he doesn't always agree with them, but I mean, they've definitely made sure to point that out within the larger show.
Yeah.
And for where they're going, on the surface, it almost seemed like Owens and Zayn were being buried. But how you're supposed to feel about it? I mean, it was just so heavy-handed, Zayn losing the match.
Which I thought was then a giant mistake, but
that I thought so too. They should have just had Owens running for the DQ.
Well, see, I thought it would have been better to have him cut the handcuffs off. And Zayn hit him with the Helluva kick. Orton goes to the corner, and Zayn hits him with the bitch at Owens, or see what's going on. He hits him with the Helluva kick and pins him. Because that way, they outsmarted Shane again, which gives a little more credence or sustenance to Shane's beef. Like, he's getting embarrassed, and that's why he's, like, further and further coming up with these stipulations. Now, I know they had to do that because they needed to knock... And then they could have just started beating on Randy Orton, then Nakamura come out, and then get beat up. And then Shane, who's, like, just totally frustrated, says, yeah, I'm going to be the referee, and I'm going to fire him if they lose. Because you got to keep... I don't want to say heat, because that's not it. But it's like, if the heels keep outsmarting you, well, then your frustration would grow. Like, Randy Orton won, his plan worked... But he's still doing that. Like, I mean, are they trying to make Shane the heel?
I really don't know. Sure, I guess I like that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I'm okay with this being totally different.
So, yeah, this is very different. It definitely it feels different. You know, yeah, it's been probably the most well done storytelling that WWE's done. Well, in this post Survivor Series period, where you know things haven't been the most interesting overall.
Yeah, that's
but,
very fair.
But of course, Raw's not building anything, really building anything right now. So that's to be understandable. SmackDown's got a not the nor does SmackDown have the biggest pay per view in the world to be building towards. But this is it's all been done really well. You just said you can't imagine Daniel Bryan heel. You can't imagine Shane as heel. You can't imagine that Zayn would go back to being a babyface this quickly, or no one's ever been a babyface in WWE. I mean, Nakamura is a natural babyface. Orton is dying to be a heel, but I don't think that there's a. I don't think there's a spot for Randy Orton to cost his own team the match. Well,
wait, what do you mean Randy Orton cost his team the match? Do you think Randy Orton turns on Shane?
I'm just kind of going through all the scenarios that could happen here with who sides with who does Daniel Bryan side with? Who sides with Shane? Yeah, just who ends up a babyface and a heel after all this is said and done.
Yeah,
because I don't see Shane.
Well, can you imagine if Daniel Bryan turns? All right, I'm going to say like air quotes turns heel. He wouldn't. Owens, Zayn, and Daniel Bryan would be the biggest babyface team on SmackDown. Because I just don't think anybody wants to boo Daniel Bryan. So I mean, and it's like you said, man. It's nice not knowing. It's actually intriguing now. Because
right.
You don't know where it's going, so I guess kudos to them, and maybe it was on accident, but I'll give them credit and say it was on purpose.
And then it does help, too, that everyone is executing. Like you said, I guess I came off sarcastic, but Sami Zayn, everyone was kind of making fun of his nervousness about talking or him, over-talking backstage and everything. Like, they've turned that into such a good thing for him to be annoying and to kind of overthink every bad thing that's happening to them. That they've... Because it wasn't working as a babyface for him. Like, they're trying to go that route, and it just was not doing anything.
Yeah, a neurotic heel is that definitely works better than a neurotic babyface. Yeah. Sami Zayn's personality ticks definitely work better in this role. I'm really liking it a lot as we keep saying. I do think that maybe since Hell in a Cell, Owens and Zayn have probably lost a little too much. They definitely lost steam going into Survivor Series without a doubt. But once again, that's being played into the story. The fact that they were relegated, they weren't on Team SmackDown, and they were relegated to the kickoff. That's part of the storyline.
So, all right. So I actually was thinking about this morning, and this kind of goes along with those lines. Like, has the fan culture... I understand what we're doing now. We're doing a podcast about wrestling where we're criticizing or breaking down or overanalyzing things. I get that. But then at what point is it where there aren't fans anymore? They're just all potential bookers. So that if something doesn't happen, we talked about this some, we watch stuff with comic movies and TV shows. To where, right now, Kevin Owens losing, I even said earlier in the show, or earlier, Zayn shouldn't have lost is how they should have done it. But then I'm not even giving it a chance to play into the story. And you kind of pointed that out. So it's does WWE actually not listen to their fans? And I'm sure to a certain extent you can say that they don't. Or are they just sticking with their plan and saying, hey, just, you know, I guess ignoring is the right word, but they're also not, but they're also giving you what you want to.
Ugh.
You're just too stubborn to realize it.
Okay, hold on a second.
Uh-oh. I'm not going to remember what I just said, so.
Yeah, well, I'm going to rewind it to a decent spin here. And
that's all right, because I'm recording anyways, so.
Oh, okay.
Lucky
well, then.
Me.
Then you get to post.
All right.
Congratulations.
All right, a little technical difficulties that weren't difficulties, but also I babbled, so I'm not sure I even made sense. But, you know, everyone's quick to criticize WWE is what I was getting at. But yet, like, their stock's gone up $450 million. I'm sorry, their overall worth has gone up $450 million in 6 months this year. Something like that. Something crazy I read today. But then these storylines, like, since they're not giving us what we want immediately... You've got Samoa Joe. All right, so on Raw, we'll just change it up a little bit. On Raw, he's in Los Angeles. I don't think that really mattered much because Joe gets a big, like, babyface pop no matter when he's out there. And
agreed.
Everybody wants, like, you know, Joe should be the champion. Joe should be this, or AJ should be champion, and this, blah, blah, this, and this. Well, what if, you know, how many guys are supposed to be champion? Like, some guys are just role fillers. So, I don't know. It seems like the fans don't want to watch the show anymore. They want to dictate the show. And I don't mean crowd reaction. I just mean if you read anything about it, which I guess you can just not be on the internet too. So, I'm done. I don't even know what the fuck I'm saying anymore. So, dicks.
Yeah, I mean,
just give me enough news and just fucking hang myself. Fuckos.
Well, there's... I guess you're whether you feel like you should be booking or you're just going to sit back and enjoy, you're going to have an opinion about something, you know, whether it is a movie or wrestling.
Yeah.
I guess I just think it's a natural thing. And,
but like I said, when can you let your opinion leave and just sit back and go, okay, I wouldn't do it this way. But damn, I'm just going to enjoy it the way it is. Because I'll tell you right now, when I went to SmackDown, I didn't give a damn about booking. I was having a time of my life because it helped we had a really good show, of course. But I was just total fan mode, and it was so much more fun. Not according to the people around me, but, you know, fuck them. That's not... I don't care. So, but, yeah.
So yeah,
I was going to hijack the show.
I don't know. Some people can't turn it off. Like, I guess that is one of those times that at the shows that I really get annoyed with that stuff. Like, I guess from listening to a podcast, I kind of expect it. But when I'm at a live event, it's just like, oh, man, just shut up and see what happens.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why it is that I have less patience in that forum.
Because at that point, you're spending your money on the damn product. Mm-hmm. If you're not enjoying yourself, stop giving them your fucking money. All your stupid chance in the world don't mean anything when, as Jeremy said, they're up $450 million in the last 6 months.
Well, then it's also it's like, hey, take your fucking Bullet Club shirt off and just try to enjoy something else other than those guys. And I'm not saying you can't enjoy them, mind you, but good God, you're triple extra large and your girlfriend's wearing her double extra large. All right, that's a little stereotypical, but whatever. It's the truth, so I don't care. Speaking of Bullet Club, those guys sure are successful.
Yeah. They've sold... supposedly, across all Hot Topic stores in the U.S., they've sold over 400,000 shirts in the last 6 months, in the last 4 months.
You're shitting me. Really?
That's the number they're claiming.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, yeah. They're doing okay for themselves.
Yeah, they're doing pretty well. I mean, granted, of course, it's all being split between Hot Topic, New Japan, Pro Wrestling Tees, and each individual member of the Bullet Club. So I don't think any one of them are making millions, although they do have the individual shirts for the Bucks, Cody, Omega, etc. So, yeah, so
Times $35.
I imagine, you know, they're all doing pretty well. I don't know if 1990. I don't know if 400,000 Austin 316 shirts were sold in 1998. Of course, it was off the WWF website at arenas and a few select shops that carried merchandise. There's been very little like what the Bullet Club have accomplished with getting their merchandise into Hot Topic stores.
Okay, so my quick math and my 1999 math with T-shirts, but I probably have to ask Eric this. If true, and you take $8 off of the sticker price or the retail price of the shirt, I'm guessing the shirts are going for $35 each, so it's going to be $27 each. Just round off math. If that is the case, that is $10,800,000. That's exactly what that should be met with, by the way. Dead, utter silence. Thinking, wait a minute, the Young Bucks and those guys just made that much off a fucking T-shirt. A T-shirt, probably. Because
It's the entire collection. It's the entire collection of Bullet Club merchandise. All the different designs. They've got. They might have like 10, 20 designs. Maybe 10.
10 million is still 10 million. So
it is still 10 million, and the one thing that's I know for a fact is that all total in the last few months, Bullet Club merchandise has caught Rick and Morty as the top selling brand at Hot Topic stores. If you're familiar at all with how popular Rick and Morty are in their niche, that's fucking impressive. That's like WWF selling South Park in 1998.
Wow. Now I'm just depressed.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, man. Good on them if they're sitting on that pile. That's why I did kind of have to laugh that Jericho made the comment on his podcast that it was almost like no matter what Kenny Omega does, he hasn't really made it until he comes to the WWE. And I'm like, I don't know about that, Chief. I think that you just kind of made it for him, like if he wasn't made already.
Okay, I mean, all they need is a major cable network. That's it. That is all New Japan really need, and the Bullet Club need in the U.S. and in North America in general, I should say.
Yeah, it'd be really nice because I still do not have access. So,
which was weird because Access TV was only on DirecTV for the longest time. And I actually had it on my cable network. And when I used to have cable, I used to had it on there, and I was very surprised when I saw it. I was happy, but yeah, it was just weird.
Now here's the thing, and this is why it's so important for wrestling shirts to not have a heelless dude on them. A lot of people might be walking into Hot Topics and just liking the design and having no idea what it's about.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah. Yeah, well, there's a bunch of people with NWO shirts I'm sure had no idea what it was, or the DX ones, for that matter.
Yeah.
I mean, Steve Austin, kind of,
That one was pretty obvious.
Yeah, you pretty much had to know who that, what that was, or who that was for, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always thought this. Like, they keep saying that indie wrestling is as big as it's ever been in the country, it's profitable and this and this and this. And then there are people like Meltzer who will say, yes, it is, but then you have to have a name.
Yeah.
And I think that's getting overlooked a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean,
you
go
have
ahead.
It's a hustle. It's definitely a hustle to build your name and build your brand. It's possible. Even Joey fucking Ryan has a six-figure income these days. But it takes a lot of work. It takes some luck. It takes a video of something you did, getting on YouTube and going viral. And the thing is that there are a lot of wrestlers making money. Are indie promotions making money? That's a question.
Yeah. Well,
that is a very valid question.
I know that. I don't know if they make money, but I know that pro wrestling, it's PWX wrestling here. They run shows all the time, and the shows get bigger and bigger. And they've actually been afforded, like Cody was here last time they were here. Joey Ryan was coming in. So like all the big indie names, I guess is what we'll have to go with. They were making the rounds here. So, but they're throwing shows all the time. So I'm guessing if that's the case that they would be making money, I would guess.
Yes. I think a number of these shows, the promoters have their full-time job, whatever that is. Some promotions are run by the guy who owns the big car dealership in town. He's not Vince McMahon or anything, but he's a millionaire, so he can put tens of thousands of dollars in each show, hopefully break even or turn a small profit. A lot of indie promoters aren't high end, but they have their business account that they pay for each show out of, and each show makes enough money to pay for the next show. Yeah, I mean, if you're an indie promoter and you're not losing money, I guess you're doing all right. As long as you're not relying on it for your full time income.
Yeah, that'd be kind of silly, but
yeah,
I mean, it is also coming from people who know dick about business too. So,
yeah.
I mean, who knows what an actual success is? I guess, but different for everybody. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
What's the one small show you've been going to up near? Well, I don't know if it's near Seabus, but
it's the couple. Well, there have been two different ones that I've gone to, but I mean they're not really running shows that frequently. Like the only other one that I guess I can think of is AIW there, Absolute Intense in Cleveland. But I don't feel like any of the places in town here are that consistent with what they're doing. And I know that because they made their way on to TNA there, and some of the guys that I know in town here are big fans of the Crists. Because I think they are the tag team champions over there right now. But they're out of Dayton right now. I think Remix Pro is the one out of Dayton that's also more consistent than what we have here in town. Because I follow everyone, and I haven't seen a show because there's and I'm trying to think of what the two different ones are. Now I'm gonna have to pop it up on Stunt Granny actually. there's that New Ohio Wrestling.
That's it. That was it, the one.
Is the one. And I'm trying to think of the other one that I went to recently, and that's the one that's definitely slipping my mind at the current moment.
All right. No, I'm not bringing them up to back on it, by the way.
I can't imagine that those guys, like, the two shows that I went to, I can't imagine that they're making you know, that the owners are really making any money. They're doing it because they are doing it. I guess they enjoy doing it. It's kind of like us doing a podcast. Like, that's what their free time is.
What people don't know is that we're rolling in money, so... Yeah, sorry, Chris. We
really?
just never shared it with you. So,
is it time? Can I start getting paid now?
Yeah, just look at that fat contract you signed, and you see all the dollar signs on that thing. Getting depressed all over again. So, not a single fucking dime.
And you guys were doing this whole podcast. I'm sorry.
Shut your fucking mouth. I know where this is going. Yeah, we were doing this before podcasts were a thing. Uh-huh. You know why? It's because one...
Oh, man.
He knows. I already bitched at him for it. Because one guy decides, hey, let's leave one of the biggest wrestling outlets in the world, and we'll go start our own thing. Yeah, good idea. Hey, you going to contribute to this? Hey, you going to return emails? No? So I got to text you and bitch at you now? Oh, okay. And then Big D, he was always kind of a fruit. No, I guess fruit's the wrong word. Sorry, D. Flighty, let's put it that way. So,
flighty works better.
Yeah. And then on top of that, Kevin and I go through a divorce right after we start. Woo-hoo-hoo! Yeah! You know what that's called? Yeah. A recipe for success. That's exactly what this is. Hey, do you want to start something that you need to put a lot of energy and time and emotion into? Yeah, that's good. And on top of that, everything around you is going to fall apart.
Oh, man.
Sorry, what? No. Yeah, that's not going to work for you, so fuck off, Flappy. Ugh.
Sorry, you know, I brought it up.
We called these audio shows because the podcast word didn't exist. That's how long ago we started doing these. Mm-hmm. Let that sink in. We were on the cusp of real technology. And we couldn't monetize it for shit. Probably a good place to stop.
Okay. Why do we have to talk about TNA for early? Because you said you can't monetize this thing for shit. That would have been the perfect segue.
You know what? That's what you call a callback. So, speaking of TNA, you can't monetize your business for shit.
Oh man.
But at least, you know, at least, like, who's like a big podcast? Like, I don't know. At least, like, I'm just this poor example, but he's a popular podcaster. It'd be like calling in, like, Mark Maron after he flamed out and closed his company and going, hey, you and your partner can run our network, run it into the ground, and then take off and go back to WWE. That was a Hulk Hogan reference that didn't quite work, so. Yeah. Oh, shit. You didn't even get it. Oh, that's really bad. Not all winners, and I don't try to win all the time, so.
Yeah, well.
Single fucking dime.
One thing that TNA may be making a dime off of might be the Woken gimmick that is finally making its way to WWE TV.
Oh, yeah,
oh no, they're not. They're not making a dime off that either.
No, they're not.
They're just going to let them have it now.
Yeah. They changed all the
contracts.
Oh,
did they actually say that?
Yeah, so Laurel Van Ness, if she is, or when she gets released, she can use the Drunken Bride gimmick.
Oh.
Yeah.
So without any of the context, but you might as well still do it.
How cool would that be, though? People are like, what's going on? Why is she acting like this? Don't even mention it. That's just how she is.
Oh, she should just stumble on the indie shows across the country.
Yes.
Just stumble
exactly
to the crowd. Yeah. Oh, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, because aren't her and Sienna are actually really good friends. And you could have, like, her, like, uppity, pissy attitude, and then her drunken friend where she has to put up with her all the time. That's not a bad idea. I mean, I don't know if they want to be a tag team or not, but, I mean, I guess they don't have to be, but yeah, you do stuff like that. It's better than her just coming out and being like, hey, I'm Laurel Van Ness.
Cool. Yeah, because no one really knows who she is still.
Yeah,
no. Except for the 12 people that ardently defend TNA still.
Oh, don't forget, she's also Zack Ryder's girlfriend.
Oh, she is?
And she has done extra work for WWE in the past, and yep. She was on Tough Enough. So yeah, she might very well be on her way to WWE.
So my first thought when I heard that, and then I saw that the Hype Bros broke up, was, oh, never mind, they're not going to use Zack Ryder for anything. But if they decided to, have his real-life girlfriend come in, just have her be like the arm candy, and, I don't know, give Zack Ryder something else. But, yeah. I probably put more thought into Zack Ryder than anyone has in a long time, so...
But no, as we were going through our, yes, Matt Hardy is now woken, not broken. Woken so that WWE can own the gimmick, which means that if and when Matt Hardy's WWE run ends, he can go back to being broken anywhere he wants, which is a great deal for Matt Hardy.
Yeah, because, well, I would imagine that this is their last stop. But who knows?
Yeah, I mean, they've got money. They practically own, all the land, and seemingly all the land in their little hometown already. I assume if Matt and Jeff wanted to walk away, they could. But Matt is always, more than Jeff, Matt's always seemed like wrestling was everything to him. So Matt might be the type of guy who will totally go till he can't go anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've been looking at watching him the way he rocks and runs lately, those knees don't got much left.
I was going to say, is that his knees or his hips? Either way,
it might
he
be both.
Does not look
comfortable. He is definitely bow-legged. He's bow-legged as fuck. He might be the most bow-legged human being I've ever seen in my life.
Yes, and it's weird. It's like, please, just stop. Stop letting him run. Come up with something. I mean, you gave Big E and all them a goddamn golf cart for WrestleMania. Have, like, some sort of hoverboard. I don't know. Like, give him the what's that? Dry ice smoke? I know, I guess the Undertaker uses that. And just have, like, a little contraption just floating him down to the ring. I'm so woken, now I can float.
Well, maybe that'll be the new Vanguard 1 can take him down to ringside on...
True.
Who said there's going to be a new Vanguard 1?
You kind of have to use the old
Vanguard. Hilarious. Although I'm not sure his lecherous ways would play well in today's environment. That damn drone was a fucking pervert.
There will still be plenty of changes. I still do not see King Maxwell making an in-ring debut in the WWE.
I'm pretty sure they won't do that, but if they don't do skits on the house and the property, then what's the point? If this isn't building up to Bray Wyatt coming to the property to do their version of the Hardy compound, to do their version of the broken deletion, of the final deletion, then this whole thing's a waste.
This is true. It's kind of funny. I don't want it to be, in some ways, I don't want it to be any more of a spectacle than it was. You know, like, I don't think they need too many extra frills.
Oh, no, it was all about the frills. This thing needs all the frills it can get. Otherwise...
I guess I'm just worried about the thing getting too
overproduced, you're thinking? That's the concern. WWE production getting their hands on it and actually turning into a six-figure production, which, no, that's not what it needs to be. I want to say six, because I don't think they pay seven on it.
I guess that's more what I'm concerned about, and not
I got you.
What you can do with a home camera these days, but I'm sure I'm still sure that, you know, the nice expensive equipment will film things better than whatever they had at their disposal previously.
Yeah, you guys are right. If they do that, it does take some of the charm away from it. You can't have HD cameras. Like, the whole Wyatt compound thing with the New Day, you really can't have that either. That was too clean, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think this is going to go that far, to be honest. I just can't see Vince going, oh my god, this is fantastic. I get the feeling he's probably like, all right, we're going to make money out of this. All right, we'll keep doing it then. And that's about it. Because it doesn't fit anywhere. And Wyatt, like, Bray Wyatt, he's way too serious. Like, even Decay, they had, not like a wink or anything, but they were such an over-the-top group as well that it kind of worked. And then when they had the final deletion with all the other stuff, like, this is just goofy stuff. So,
well, maybe they can portal over the Bash Brothers from SmackDown, or whatever they are.
The Bludgeon Brothers?
Why couldn't we just have Luke Harper and Eric Rowan as a tag team and just have them be that fucking vicious?
Because they had to be repackaged to not look that different. Just be the Wyatt family carrying large hammers. They're never going to use, because that's just
And then
illegal in a wrestling match.
Probably illegal anywhere. Yeah. I mean, everyone knows my love of Luke Harper. So what a shock that I'm, you know, not exactly hating it, but their debut match where Harper just slaps Rowan in the face for no reason, and then they just crushed, like, I can't remember, was it the Hype Bros, I think? I was like, what are these animals doing? And it was great. And the weird thing is, you actually know how Eric Rowan and Luke Harper are. Like, I watch Up, Up, Down, Down, and watch that Madden tournament. Luke Harper's hilarious. He's not a big dumb oaf. That's not what I'm going for, but he was just playing around and, you know, it being like a real human being. And then we've seen Eric Rowan talking too, like, out of context, like that whole creepy shit he was doing that they just dropped. Like, what was wrong with just having like these two maniacs just running around together instead of giving them whatever they've been giving them? Oh well,
crushed red velvet. You don't want them to be given.
It's just not helping. At least I've got Braun Strowman still. So, you know,
Braun. He is amazing.
Yep. Best thing going in WWE.
Yep. Still is, definitely. I enjoy Braun very much. They know what they're doing with him.
I was confused Monday when he was supposed to be the competition for Elias, who strangely has grown on me. And instead of, like, fighting, instead of a match, they just fought and he ran off. Like, well, that's kind of a weird competition, dude, if you're not actually fighting the guy, but, you know, is what it is. So, and Braun didn't lose, so, you know, or have some dumb shit with Kane go on right then. But
no,
we just see where they're going to go with it next week. I mean, it's not any kind of anything goes type of match, so I imagine it won't necessarily be the blow-off just yet. Kane might get something back on Braun this time so we can keep this going.
I know we did this last time. I was like, when does Kane have to start campaigning? So,
with these two characters, they can pretty much do anything in regards to attempted murder and having them just come back the next week.
Yeah, the chair to the throat was a little weird, but oh well.
He was grabbing onto his throat. He was clearing his throat. He was selling.
Well, I do think that the weird part was the fact that, both of them came back the next week. It's just like, oh, okay, this is a reason to keep them off TV at least for a week. Nope.
Yeah.
Showing right back up. Alrighty then.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Chris said on it earlier, it's like even the Woken stuff, it's 1 week, I'm happy to see it. But it's not like WWE's been exactly interesting, outside of a few acts, since Survivor Series.
No, this is this is the doldrums.
Yeah, and as Shahid pointed out, it's December. I'm like, that's true. So
it is December. You know what? Sometimes I think I pointed out last week. Sometimes the doldrums begin right after SummerSlam. They at least kept enough going on through the fall for there to only be one crappy month before Rumble season.
Yeah, that's all right. I mean, it hasn't been bad. It hasn't been as interesting as it was. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, good place. I think that does it for this one.
Yep.
We were all over the place and even got the mock ourselves. So. For the brand, stunt granny that is Frango 11, that's at Granny Maze. The other one's at Chris Calamita. And that is my send away line. So if someone else wants to close the show, have at it.
Oh, no. I'm going to say bye to everyone. Thanks for having me on. We Watch Stuff will be recording Thursday, and it'll be posted Friday. And now Chris gets to take us out because this is my favorite part of the show.
All right. thank you, everybody, for listening. If anybody out there has a money-making wrestling podcast and needs a new sidekick, I am taking I am taking offers, and I will see you again after a while.
That just felt like cheating, but it's still good. So,
a callback.
Yes. God damn. All right, I'm going to get moving.
All right. Oh, you're still recording? I can at least say Bell Time Beer of the Show, Stone Vengeful Spirit IPA.
Well, I didn't hit stop yet, so watch. I'm going to have the last word, so yeah, not a goddamn dime.